real one.
Where were you born, Mr. Wallet?
West Auckland, 1933, July.
A mining town, was it, West Auckland? Little mining village?
It was in a sense, it was a mining village. There was 13 little drift mines around it. It had its own brewery, and there was a mill in the next village in St. Helens, like a little self-contained place.
What did your father do for a living?
We had a small holding, 9 acre small holding. We milked cows, we had a milk business, we bred pigs, we bred horses, we had poultry. We used to have to milk the cows by hand, deliver the milk, fetch the empty bottles back, wash them out, sterilise them, put the milk in and go and finish the milk round, carrying a container with the measure on. And again, we used to go out on an evening as well and do one or two people.
Did your mother work with you?
She worked, yes. She was the poultry lady. She did all the poultry and looked after the house.
So it was a family business? A little family business?
In a sense, yes. My sister was, I have a sister 4 years younger than me. But I don't remember her being too much involved. But she was more academic. Later on, she went to the grammar school. I just went to the ordinary secondary modern at West Auckland. But it was all work, work, work. That's what it seemed to be, you know, as I was growing up. I used to go to Sunday school. I went to all the Sunday schools in the area. Apart from the Catholic Church, I had you got a book at the Christmas time for good attendance. I had a book off them all: Primitive Methodist, Church of England, Wesleyan Methodist, Salvation Army, Pentecostals. No, but I couldn't get one off the Catholics. Get one there.
What caused you to go to so many different churches in so short a space of time?
Well, the friends I was with, they used to do that, so I went in my time upwards. We went to church. But I used to enjoy the Primitive Methodists, because they used to do the anniversaries where you would get up and say a little poetry or something like that, and I enjoyed that. And then later when I started at junior school, the work got a little bit harder because we didn't have enough grazing land for the cattle. We were milking 14 cows at the time, and you used to have to take them to work, take them up to somebody's field we'd rented with the bike, and then go to school from there, and then straight from school you had to go and fetch them down from the fields and milk them, clean everything up, so it was nearly 7 o'clock before you were finished. Then you had to go back again at in the winter months, about 9:30, for a drink of water and a little feed for them.
So what time did your day start as a young child?
6:30 in the morning. We were fortunate we had electric put in about 1936, so we had an electric milking machine that helped us during the war years, I would think. But we probably got a little bit more to do when my father did the Home Guard during the war. You see, he would be out on the night patrol on that, and then, you know, as soon as he'd done a little bit in the morning, then he might retire for a few hours.
So you were brought into this family business, family concert, at a very, very early age?
Very early age, yes. My school days all seemed to be work when I look back, and I don't remember many highlights of the odd time until we had a trip to Retker or to Whitby and that. But
there were no family holiday?
Once, I think I went with my mother to Retka when I was about 11, I think, somewhere like that, about 11.
Had your father been in the First World War at all?
No, he was born about 1906, I believe, somewhere like that. He missed that. But he was a horseman all his life. He liked horses. We bred horses. But I didn't like horses at all. I was terrified of them. Everything he had to be full of fire. He used to come out of that stable on its back legs, his horses, with me around its neck sometimes, you know, terrified. Never liked them. But he liked horses. He bred horses. He bred them. And he used to go out to hunt with the Zetland from what he bred himself. He ended up, I think, with the three-quarter blood that he had there. And he hunted with the Zetland.
Was it a comfortable life as a child?
Well, I was never ill-treated and I was well-fed. I got an egg every day for breakfast. I don't remember that.
But the family were Right, comfortably off of them.
Well, no, we had to work. I think we worked. I can never remember. I didn't do without. I was always well shod. I was always well dressed. Different to some of the people I went to school with, I remember. It used to be the loaf of bread clutched to the chest and the marge from the on the top or the fat and cut it off. And that's with, you know, people with families from 6, 7 up over, you see. That was their breakfast, and what they did for lunch, I wouldn't know for dinner on the night, you see. But we always seemed to do well. As my father always said, you keep your belly full, your back will stand up. And it just went on from that.
Can you describe the house you lived in?
Yes, the house is still there, actually, in West Auckland. It's a class 2 listed house. It's stone built. It's a great big, maybe 2 foot thick, the walls. It was built around about 1604, as according to the history books. It was cold in the winter because there was no heating upstairs. It was all downstairs. It was the old black-leaded grate with a oven at one side and a boiler at the other side and the tin bath in front of the fire. But it was a happy household. We weren't badly treated. I just had plenty of work. That's the only thing to do. Disappointing sometimes when your friends who didn't live in a little industry like that, you know, they would say, well, are you going to come out? And I said, no, I've got my chores to do first. Which I could understand. I mean, I don't suppose my father could have coped with what we had, you see. He was probably a little over ambitious, really, because we had, as I said, we milked 14 cows, we bred pigs, he bred horses, he always had horses. And
you're quite busy.
We were very, very busy, yes, very busy. I remember the first tractor we got was a 1929 Morris Cowley converted. It had a Bedford back axle in it. I'll come on to that later, but I used to go to Ramsworth with it.
Where did you start school?
At St. Evans School. And my present wife, I always fancied her since I was 4, and she used to come on the cart because we delivered milk to the school. And we used to pick her up and take her to school as well. That's why I went to St. Helen's School.
Have you any memories of school life?
The infant school was quite happy. And I remember when we had during the war years probably, when we used to have the air raid practice where you had to get under the desk, but you always got one of these sticks of twist barley sugars. And I've had barley sugars ever since. I always have barley sugars with me. Those were happy days, but as I say, you came home from school and you had to go to work. But the junior school, I think I lost a lot of time because I was delivering milk on the morning. You're always late going to school. And I do remember that I was in the second class for 2 years, and then I went from there, I missed 2 classes and went into the top class that I was in with lads that were nearly 2 years older than me, and I stopped in that class when they moved on up to the senior school. But then I got away from that, went to the senior school, and I still lost time because he was delivering milk on the morning.
Did that not cause trouble between the school and your parents that you were late so often?
Yes, it did. I used to get the stick from time to time, but the kitty catcher used to come, but when we saw him coming, he just used to leave the dogs out the front so he couldn't get down the drive. it did cause trouble because we had the headmasters and milk customers in Dublin.
And pretty strict discipline at the school, are they?
Yes and no. I say my education suffered in the early days, that when I moved into Copeland Lane Secondary School, I was in class 5, class 4, class 3, class 2 and class 1, which were like 3 B classes and 2 A classes. The only class I missed out was class 3, was the A class. So everybody else went through 3 classes, I went through 5. I was a little bit of, I'm too good for the lower class, I'm not good enough for the next one. But we got through that. And then I got caught with that Ellen Wilkinson from Shields. She was the MP that put the school leaving up to 15. So I had to stop another year, and it was And we didn't do anything at all. We didn't have a teacher. He just had to fit you in where they could. You'd go in the hall, you'd go in the passageway. But you had no teacher. You were left to your own devices, really. Just a waste of time for the year.
And it mustn't have pleased your parents, who would expect you to be out of school and working full time.
That's right. You were doing. Well, that's why I was more later and later, and sometimes maybe miss. I don't remember many misses, but I do remember being late on numerous occasions.
So you wouldn't have much time for the usual leisure that a child would have.
No, not at all. Not at all. Everything was late with me, and especially in the summer months, because we only had a small acreage, we used to go and cut grass, other people's grass, so we could have to make hay for it, you see. So you were on their weekends and nights, cutting sometimes up to midnight if the nights were fine and there's no dew down on the grass. You know, we've cut in the moonlight umpteen times.
Was discipline strict in the home?
Yes, it was. My father was very firm about that. I think he only had one good hiding off him for staying late. But as long as you were in for 10 o'clock, you were all right. But he was a quick-tempered little fella. And the least bit thing, he would be up 5,000, you know. We had many a row when I matured.
Leaving school, you become full-time.
Oh, it was full-time, yes, full-time then. But then he, when I left school, we increased the milk round started to get bigger, and we were doing about 60 gallon a day, which is not a bad, but then we started to breed more pigs, and he had two brood mares then, so he was, and we had, I don't remember which of the cows, because the milk marketing board seemed to come along then, and because we were moving cows up the road, some of the restrictions and that, he had to get shut of the cows, and we were buying the milk in from the milk marketing board.
Did he pay you a wage?
Yes, I got a wage, yes. Yes, I got a wage.
Did you recall how much it was?
It wouldn't be very much. I think it just would be pocket money for the first year or two. I don't remember. I think it just would be probably get me clothes, me lodge, and pocket money. I don't know, 10 shillings a week, probably. I mean, that seems an awful lot of money in those days. I'd gone back to 47 and 48. But I didn't mind it. I mean, you're away from school. There was no restrictions there. And it still was a little restricted, in as much as that when your friends would say, "Are you coming up?" Well, we're on hay time, you've got the weather's fine. If it was raining, yes, I could come, but we've got to do the hay time first, or you've got to do the bit corn first. Or you would do a bit of contract for somebody else and we'd be away there.
I know it's jumping forward a little bit, but what happened to the business at the end of the day?
Well, I went into the army and I felt obligated. I came back out after me 3 years to take up the business. And we still had the 9 acres right up to 61. And then the land development came along and they wanted one field, because before the war they'd already put a foul pipe through and a storm drain through. They just left it. So when the land development came for the industry, for the village, with the pits all closing, that was an ideal place because the services were all partially there for them. Well, that meant there was only the milk round then, so there wasn't enough work to keep two people, so I had to go out in the big wild world when I was 30 and make a living.
Well, we'll come back to that part of it. I was interested in what happened to your business. So essentially, some of your land was compulsory purchased?
It was compulsory purchased, yes, the 5 acres. And once they'd done that, the local council came along and said, "Well, you haven't got much chance to do anything with this, so we'll take it for housing." And they took it all right away around the small place. Rather funny. My father didn't make anything of it after the land development took over until a few weeks ago, and there was a case in the paper where his airshed had been burned out, the people who bought it. So I don't know what he's keeping on this. He's right in the middle of a housing complex, but he's still got a little farm.
Second World War, you get through that okay?
Well, yes, I got through that all right. I used to enjoy going to my grandmother's down on Teesside and going in the shell there and coming out the next day and looking for shrapnel that had been around that had dropped near the shipyards at Furness Shipyard at Hallerton Hill. I used to enjoy that.
Presumably, with having this business, you would have had a little bit more than your rations, or did you have to hand so much over for to the food within the area? I'm thinking in terms of that. Sometimes, if you had a pig, you didn't get your bacon ration or something. Get the butcher.
Well, I don't know. I think it's the same as everything, is it? My father trained as a slaughterman before the war, and he was always interested in that. And we used to go and kill pigs for people at Christmas time. Maybe it's about 10 over the season. But he did everything. He slaughtered them. We cut it up. We salted it. We cured it. We boned it. And 3 weeks later, we went back and cut it up into the proper joints and rolled it and salted it and did everything. And I had to go and buy a block of salt and fetch it home on the bush and then sit and scrape it down ready for doing the curing later. But I used to go as they called a scudder man, which would be to get the water boiling hot so you could just go in front of him with a kettle as he scraped the pig. None of this modern stuff, dip it in a hot tank and out, and half a dozen people there to do it.
But during the Second World War itself, you managed pretty well.
Oh, we didn't do too well. See, we had the poultry, and I got an egg every day for breakfast. We had milk as well. I was never short that way, food-wise, I shouldn't think. But I don't know what goes on with other people. In all these things, there's ways and means of getting by, isn't there? And I don't remember the pubs being shut much in West Auckland at the time. So I say we had our own brewery as well, you see. That was a handy thing.
Do you remember the war ending and what happened in the village?
Well, I remember the war because my father had the big maps on the wall and we had all these coloured flags. And the paper of the day would have the headlines, and he used to make a special time of that, and he'd be there, he'd be moving the flags across. The French are coming in here, the Canadians there, the British here, the Americans. And we had all these coloured flags going across these maps. It's a shame I didn't keep the maps, really. You don't realise these things. But, yes, we do. We had a special carnival, I think, at West Auckland one year. And we had a prisoner of war, a German, stayed with us for 2 years. And the farm next to us had two or three. And they made grow more food, and they put it on the cart. And, as I said, he liked horses. These horses always used to be blooming on them all. They all had to be groomed before you took them out. They got fed and groomed before you got fed. And we used to have the ribbons, the red, white and blue, and they would all be in the horses' tails, the mane, and it was always a good sight when he turned the horse out. It always looked well. But he got a special commendation for this. I mean, it took a lot of time. They put hay sheds and put sheaves up to fit in and painted this and that and the other, but we have some photographs somewhere of
The German prisoner you mentioned that was with you for 2 years,
yes.
How did you get on with him?
Very, very well, because he was a farmer's son. And as farmers do, different with tractors now, with horses, when you used to plough with a horse, you came to what they called the corners, the head rigs, you always got a round part where you went round with the horse. Well, this prisoner of war used to go back with a spade and dig all the corners out. Now, we didn't have any land, so we had 13 allotments rented to grow mangels, which was like food for cattle feed for the winter. But this Werner Lenz, they called this lad, the big strapping lad he was, he dug all the corners out and hand-sowed the mangels, so we didn't waste any of the land.
Did he?
But he was a very, very...
Did he speak about Germany's winning the war or losing the war? Did he ever?
No, he wasn't interested in the war. He was pleased to be out of it. He thought it was great. I mean, it's rather funny. I have a brother-in-law. My sister went back to see him. Must have been in the 80s, I think. And he still had the pair of shoes that he bought at Bishop Auckland. I don't know whether he kept them. He hadn't worn them much, but they were there. But no, and he was well liked in West Auckland. He'd come with the milk round. If my father had something else to do, he would come and look after the horse, because I knew the round and the people knew whatever he got. But people thought that they had bit up of him. He didn't matter whether he was a German or whatever. He worked for Billy Wall, and that was good enough for them.
Coming up to national service, did you realise this was going to happen to you?
Well, I knew it was going, because the lads I went to school with, they were all going in, and you would see them. I didn't drink or anything like that. I was never an early drinker. I didn't start drinking until I went in the army. But I would see them with the uniform on and with the different flashes, whether they were in corps men or whether they were in regiments or the RAF or the Navy. I knew my turn would come. But it was a little frightening, because I'd never been out to West Auckland before.
How did they inform you that the time was up, the time you had to go?
I think I was busy maybe cleaning out the animals somewhere, and my father came round and he said, "Your papers have come." And I said, "What does that mean?" He said, "Well, I think you better open them." So when we opened them, there was a travel pass in from West Auckland to Brandsmith. And he said, that's it. I said, "I know, but how do I get to Brandsmith? I've never been out of West Auckland on my own before." He said, "Go and see Jack Lamb. He's the station master at West Auckland." So I went to see Jack Lamb, and I said, "Look, Jack, I'm going in the army next Thursday. How do I get to Brandsmith?" He said, "Come and see me on the morning, I'll tell you." So when the time came, and I had my little suitcase to take with me, and I went to see Jack Lamb, and he said, "Well, right, it's like this, John. You get on the train here. Your first stop will be Bishop Auckland, possibly Hunwick, Willington." He said, "You'll know when you get to Brandsmith, because," he said, "there'll be a big basket there shouting, 'Get off here for the Durhams.'" And there was another chap sat in the corner of the coach when I got on it, and he never spoke, and I never spoke at all. But we're still the best of friends today. A lad called Bob Hayton, he was from Windermere. And sure enough, there was a big chap there, Corporal Braithwaite, and he looked massive. He'd been in Malaya with a coilies, and he had the purple ribbon, and he was a real smart soldier, polished boots.
Had you had a medical before this?
Yes, I'd been to Middlesbrough for the medical. And he asked
me... It was pretty thorough, wasn't it, the medical aid?
Yes, it was, and it was humorous as well, because I thought it was humorous. They said to me, "What do you want to go in?" Well, with going back to going on the milk round in West Auckland, we had a little cafe on the corner, and we used to get the armoured corps in from Barncastle and the medical people from Catrick. And the chap in the medical said, "What would you like to go?" I said, "The armoured corps or the medics?" "And why is that?" I said, "Well, you all ride around in trucks, that one, if you ride around with them." And then when he came, he said, "Join the Durham Light Infantry."
Were you obviously sad at leaving home?
No,
quite looking forward to it,
yes. Hadn't been away from home before, and I'd been on the milk ever since I was small. That you enjoyed meeting people, and you could talk to people. I mean, you didn't like everybody, but I enjoyed meeting people, and I enjoyed talking to people, and I thought, well, this is an adventure. Well, I think I cried the first night when I was there, because, oh God, the beds, there were biscuits, and one bed went inside, the bottom half pushed inside the other half.
We'll come to that in just a moment. What date did you join the...
6th of December 1951. I can't forget that, like I can't forget my army number.
So you got to the railway station, and there was a corporal, as you say, Braithwaite, shouting you. What happened to you then when you got off the train?
There was only two of us off the train. Whether there was any trains coming the other way to catch them coming out of Durham for there, but he just said, "You go out of the station, turn right, go down to the crossroads, turn right, and keep going up the little bank, and on the left hand side you'll see the barracks, that'll be there, chap with the white armband on, white gate, as the regimental police." And we just strolled down there. It was about a mile distance. We had to be in before 4 o'clock, I remember that, and we were in early, probably about 2 o'clock. And there was a little chap there he didn't look very frightening at first, with his little stick under his arm. And his Zara said Rafferty, and he always got called Chips. But his stick seemed as big as what he did. He only was a little fella, but why would he have to shout at you? It was, you know, it was frightening. But he just went in, and you gave your name into the guard room, and he said, oh yes, you're in Hooge squad, or you're in the other squad, whatever it is. And sure as where the barrack rooms were.
Was this would be the wartime camp, was it? Just beyond the castle?
To the best of my knowledge, the camp had been closed. And we had a report that came from the Echo at Bishop Auckland, and he had them all together. And when he took the photograph, and somebody had a paper the following day, and it had the heading underneath, this is the formation of the 1st Battalion before it goes to Korea. And we didn't even know about Korea. And when everybody's fully said, you know, well, they've been fighting in Korea now for nearly a year and a half. Everybody volunteered for the parachute regiment.
So the camp that you were going into was the old original building?
Yes, it was the old wooden building.
They hadn't pulled it down at that point.
No, it was the old wooden buildings, yes. And the coal yard was at the top of the top end of the camp. And you had to have a little patrol out, two of you, one a night. One to watch while the other were underneath to get a bucket full of coal to keep the storm going, because it was December when we went in.
Can you describe the layout of the camp? You said the coal was at the far end.
At the top, yes. Well, you went in through the gate past the guard room. You went straight across and you came to the square. If you turned left and walked down and round the square on the bottom side was the naffy at the down a few steps. You walked right across to the other side of the square, and in front of you would be the canteen. There was, I'll say, a 6-foot path, and that would run all the way down to the bottom of the camp on the Page Bank Road, and then it just meandered up between the different, one or two barracks had been taken down, barrack blocks had been taken down. And then it meandered up past the ablution block. And we would have the first two blocks, which would be Hooge Platoon. And the top two would be Inkerman Platoon. And then at the back of that would be the coal yard, where the coal was put in. I think they had access from, maybe off the main road, where it would be locked up.
So there's nowhere near the numbers in the camp that there had been during the war, that time?
No, this was just like a holding and I'm never sure whether it was Colonel Fleming who was the CO there. There was a training cadre there.
And this is basic training, in effect?
This was basic training. This was 6 weeks basic training, yes. Where the sergeant we had was a Sergeant Clapperman. Off duty, he was a gentleman. But when he was instructed, he was a horrible person, and all he did was swear at you. To make sure, and he shouted, and he came round the back of you and shouted at you. I enjoyed the drill. I used to.
Yes, we'll come to the drill.